It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where we are up to 43 degrees, our predicted high. At the airport, they are showing easterly winds at 17 miles per hour, rather, and they have 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for rain for the rest of the day. Well, rain for the rest of the week. Southeast winds gusting to 25 today and up to 35 tonight. Coming up on the Midday Report, Rex. It doesn't sound good, but it could be beneficial to Kodiak Electrical Association. And state senators are pitching a new package of crime bills. Plus, there are more refugees settling in Alaska than ever before, and the state has held its first resettlement conference. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Nora Rahm. More than 1,000 people have been arrested during pro-Palestinian demonstrations in colleges and universities across the country. About 300 of those arrests took place in New York City at Columbia University and City College. At the University of California in Los Angeles, police moved in with clashes erupted between rival protesters. Classes were canceled there today. Brown University has taken a different approach, negotiation. Students agreed to dismantle their encampment after the school agreed to consider in the fall divesting from companies that do business with Israel. A Florida law that bans most abortions after 6 weeks took effect today. Regan McCarthy of member station WFSU reports this will significantly reduce abortion access throughout the Southeast.
The 6-week ban replaces a law that allowed abortions up to 15 weeks. State Democratic Senator Lauren Book worries the stricter rule will endanger women and leave them with few choices.
One, have the financial resources and ability to become medical refugees in their own state. Oftentimes, having to have an excess of $2,500 to travel to Maryland or Illinois to receive appropriate health care.
Anti-abortion groups say they hope the change leads to the closure of clinics. In November, Florida voters will weigh in on a proposed state constitutional amendment that could reverse the ban and enshrine the right to abortion up to viability. For NPR News, I'm Regan McCarthy in Tallahassee.
Wrapping up his latest trip to the Middle East, Secretary of State Antony Blinken is calling on Hamas to agree to a hostage deal. He spoke with Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who is facing opposition inside his cabinet to any deal with Hamas. NPR's Michelle Kellerman reports.
Secretary Blinken was here not just to promote a hostage deal, but also to spotlight new aid routes into Gaza. He saw food trucks at the Kerem Shalom crossing, gazed over a huge concrete wall into Gaza, and told reporters at the Ashdod port that there is more aid getting to the Palestinians.
The progress is real, but given the need, given the immense need in Gaza, it needs to be accelerated. It needs to be sustained.
That's a message he says he brought to Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and to Israel's defense minister. He also is pushing for a ceasefire that would bring hostages home. Michelle Kellerman, NPR News, Tel Aviv.
The Federal Reserve is holding interest rates steady as it waits to see what happens with inflation. Prices have been climbing faster than many analysts had expected. Policymakers wrapped up their two-day meeting today. On Wall Street, just before the close, the market was mixed. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is up 87. The S&P is down 17. This is NPR.
Ang NPR Balita ay hatid sa inyo ng Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. Para sa kaukulang impormasyon tungkol sa aming mga serbisyo, tumawag lamang sa 481-2400.
For KMXT News, I'm Terry Haynes. As Kodiak Electric Association's revenue from the local commercial fish processors dwindles, the utility is exploring alternative funding streams. One involves green power markets and selling what are called renewable energy certificates, or RECs. KMXT's Davis Hovey reports on how RECs could benefit KEA's bottom line.
The Kodiak Electric Association's Board of Directors last month approved a 5-year contract with Greenlight Energy Group, a New York-based company, to sell local renewable energy certificates. One renewable energy certificate, or REC, represents 1 megawatt hour of electricity generated by a renewable energy resource. In Kodiak, the vast majority of local power is generated by wind and hydro sources, which qualifies the utility provider to sell the certificates.
It is actually described as a non-tangible vehicle. It's nothing that we budget for.
Dan Menth is the manager of finance for Kodiak Electric Association. He says the association provides basic data on its energy output and in return could receive thousands of dollars on a quarterly basis.
It's a very simple process. We just relay our actual generation kilowatt hours from both the Terre Lake Hydro Facility and then the Pillar Mountain Wind Project. And they do their thing behind the scenes and turn them into a marketable REC.
The association enacted its first electricity rate hike for Kodiak residents in 30 years at the beginning of April. That was partially due to declining sales from the local fish processors, which account for a third of the association's power consumption. Menth says selling RECs will help offset the utility provider's revenue from local businesses and residents.
It'll go into our normal bottom line margins that help pay our bills, and anything left over at the end of the day is margins, and those would get paid back in the form of capital credits.
Kelly Beck, the chief executive officer of Greenlight Energy Group, says once Kodiak Electric Association transfers the hard numbers, then her company turns its power generation data into a market-based instrument for sale.
And the beauty of renewable energy and RECs is that it's metered. So this is not a guess. Right? There's a meter tied to the production, so we know actual megawatt hours that are generated from that facility. In most cases, those RECs would be entered into a registry.
Beck describes her company as the middleman or marketer. Some buyers are big-name companies like Whole Foods or Starbucks that want to certify that they are purchasing renewable energy by buying RECs in the North American market. It sounds almost too good to be true. But Beck says with a growing number of U.S. companies committing to reducing their carbon footprint and cutting greenhouse gas emissions, eventually there may not be a market for selling RECs at all.
And I think that ultimately the day that there was a grid that was operated on 100% renewable energy all of the time, then you would not need to purchase RECs anymore. And that will be a good day for us all in this industry, I think.
Beck and KEA's Menth point out that neither Greenlight Energy Group nor the local utility make any money if the RECs are not sold, so Greenlight has a strong incentive to get the best sale price for RECs as it can. Menth expects KEA will see a steady stream of revenue coming in later this year as their certificates are sold, which could help offset utility rate increases for Kodiak residents in the future. Reporting in Kodiak, I'm Davis Havi.
Alaska state senators are pitching a new package of crime bills dealing with a wide range of issues from drugs to child abuse to grand jury proceedings. Senate Judiciary Committee Chair Matt Klayman, an Anchorage Democrat, introduced the bill on Monday.
We have been looking carefully, and I've been studying carefully, different issues going on in terms of how do we make steps to improve public safety and make wise use of our public safety resources. And the goal with the bill is to address those and do that effectively so we can really show the public meaningful steps that we've taken.
The package has 4 bills rolled into one and is a bit of a grab bag. The bill would stiffen penalties on people selling the powerful opioid fentanyl and methamphetamine, among other drugs. It would allow dealers or manufacturers to be charged with second-degree murder rather than manslaughter if someone dies from taking their drugs. The director of the Department of Law's Criminal Division, Angie Kemp, told the Senate Judiciary Committee the upgraded penalties come in response to a sharp increase in overdose deaths in recent years.
These aspects of HB 66 are designed to address that public health crisis and hopefully create some additional deterrence for these types of offenses and recognize that, as I said, we have a crisis on our hands and it seems to be getting worse.
That part of the package comes from a bill proposed by Governor Mike Dunleavy and passed by the House last year. Another key change proposed by the governor and included in the package would allow hearsay to be presented to grand juries. Klayman says the bill would prevent victims of sex crimes from having to testify before a grand jury.
If you've been the victim of sexual assault or sexual abuse, going and testifying in front of a grand jury, there's no cross-examination in front of a grand jury, but testifying in front of that grand jury can be incredibly stressful and be the source of additional trauma.
Victims would still have to testify and be cross-examined at trial. The new rules would be consistent with the federal system and a variety of other states, Klayman said. That portion of the bill would also require out-of-state sex offenders to be listed on the state's sex offender registry. Klayman says it's an effort to fix a loophole in a 2019 bill that allowed out-of-state sex offenders to avoid registering if they were convicted prior to 2019. House Republican leaders recently signaled support for that measure. House leadership has also voiced support for another section of the bill that would redefine child pornography as, quote, child sexual abuse material, close quote. And the final portion of the four-part bill would allow people found incompetent to stand trial on violent felonies to be involuntarily committed to a psychiatric hospital. That's if they have a violent history and pose a risk to the public. Klayman says that's a response to a 2022 stabbing at the Lusac Library in Anchorage. The suspect had been found incompetent for trial 2 months earlier for prior alleged attacks. The bill is scheduled for hearings and amendments in Senate committees before it heads to a floor vote. The number of refugees settling in Alaska has sharply increased in recent years. The state held its first resettlement conference last week to bring together service providers and stakeholders to better accommodate the rise in new arrivals. Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early has more.
Alaska used to average about 150 refugees a year, with numbers as low as 22 during the peak of the coronavirus pandemic. Recently, that number has jumped exponentially, says Issa Patrasano, the state refugee coordinator for Alaska.
In fiscal year 22, we had 497. And then in fiscal year 23, which had been last year, we had about 485. And now we're in fiscal year 24, and we're probably on track to hit around 400 or 500.
Spatrasano works for Catholic Social Services, the nonprofit that handles refugee resettlement in Alaska. She says conflicts in Afghanistan and Ukraine are the major drivers of the increase in refugees in Alaska. The rise has come with a boost in federal funding and an increase in service providers for refugees in the state.
There's been news stories about how people are in Delta Junction and how people are in Wasilla and how people are... But we went from one refugee health screening clinic to five refugee health screening clinics. You know, we went from one school district to three school districts taking money. And so we need to get those people together.
That need to bring stakeholders together resulted in the state's first resettlement conference held last week in Anchorage. Spatrasano says attendees heard from a variety of organizations, including state offices of public assistance and labor, volunteer organizations, federal officials, and more.
Just hearing, like, from people directly who are working in all these different capacities around the state to contribute to refugee health and well-being and welcome, it was so fascinating, you know, and it's like my whole job is to do this. And so I have to imagine that everyone else there was just as fascinated by what they were learning, because I might be the person in the state that knows the most, and even I learned a ton of new things while there.
Some of the things she learned include how some programs are teaching English to immigrants using Alaska Native culture, the role the federal government plays, and the impact refugees have on the labor force. At a time when the state is struggling to hire workers, she says refugees could fill that gap.
Go to a hotel in town, go to a restaurant in town, find out who's tiling your bathrooms. They're probably refugees who are resettled or Ukrainians who have arrived, but not just those entry-level jobs. We're also really focused on people getting back into those highly skilled jobs.
Looking forward, Spatrasano says her office is looking at two major topics. One has to do with how long Ukrainian refugees will be allowed to stay in the country. She says those refugees are here under what's called a 2-year humanitarian parole status, and those statuses need to be reauthorized.
That needs to be kind of resolved, right? Like, are we going to let people stay? Are we not going to let people stay? Is the expectation still when the war ends that they're all going to go back to Ukraine? Is there a hope that maybe Congress is going to act and allow them to stay indefinitely? I think that's an important question for the state of Alaska.
Another hot topic is the upcoming presidential election. Spatrisano says the president has direct control over the number of refugees that can come into the country, and the Biden and Trump administrations have had wide differences in the number of refugees they allowed in. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Wesley Early.
Today's KMXT local news is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak, a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. On the web at kodiak.org and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way, 486-4782.
The annual spring bowhead whale hunt is in full swing along Alaska's Arctic coast. This month, Uktiagvik landed its first bowhead of the season. Alaska Public Media's Kavitha George spoke with the successful whaling crew about what it means to provide for the community, especially as climate change creates new uncertainty for spring whaling.
The garage door at Bernadette and Quincy Adams' house rolls up, and steam floods out into the yard. A husky named Avak sits tied up in the snow, hoping for scraps of yesterday's catch, a 31-foot bowhead whale. For the Adams and their whaling crew, the Alak crew, today is cooking day.
Each part of the whale is cooked differently.
Natasha Itta is a member of the Alak crew. She stands over one of the many simmering basins arranged around the garage. Boiling slices of bowhead skin and blubber, or unalak, float on top. Alicia Keys blasts from a Bluetooth speaker. Everyone in this steamy garage is buzzing with joy for Utqiagvik's first spring bowhead. Natasha says the meat from this catch will be shared with the community, other North Slope villages, and even family in the lower 48.
The bounty just goes all over the place.
For Inupiat communities in northern Alaska, bowhead whaling is a central part of spring. But climate change is now adding an extra element of uncertainty to the whaling season. Warmer temperatures are affecting the region's sea ice. The ice attached to the coastline, or shorefast ice, is becoming thinner and less consistent. That's an extra challenge for crews that have to go out on the ice in the spring to reach open water. Natasha says the community has already experienced what it's like to go a whole spring without whales.
You know, you could kind of feel the sad, because whaling brings so much joy.
The community is already thinking through how things might change in the future if the season becomes more unpredictable.
It's going to take a lot of adapting, because we do a lot of our feasts and our celebrations in the summertime, and if we don't get whales in the spring and we don't have that, it's almost like you kind of lose a piece of your identity, because, you know, that's who we've always been. That's who we're going to be, you know. So.
For one young hunter, this year marked a milestone.
My name is Donald Adams. I'm 17, but a lot of my friends and family call me Button.
Donald, or Button, is the son of the Alak crew captains Bernadette and Quincy. He's been going out on the ice since he was 7 years old, learning from his parents.
Ever since I got older, they started teaching me how to do stuff more, taught me what to look for on the ice, when to go out, when not to go out, which way the wind direction's going, the weather's, how it's going to be.
In recent years, Donald has been training to take on the role of striker from his dad, Quincy. That's the person who launches the darting gun that harpoons the whale. Just before midnight last Tuesday night, the crew prayed with the boat and headed out.
The water is pretty flat, almost glass. There's little waves, but it wasn't too bad. And we saw a whale along the tuvok, that's the edge of the ice where the ice and the water meet. We call that the tuvok.
But that first whale along the tuvok quickly disappeared. Then they saw another one, 300 yards out, and sped towards it.
Sure enough, right beside us, the whale popped up, and then I threw the harpoon.
So it was, like, right there?
Like 5 feet from me? Yeah. It was close. It was a good shot, too.
The crew towed the 32-ton whale back to camp and heaved it onto the ice with the help of snow machines. It took about 40 people another 6 hours to process the catch.
I was up for almost 40 hours.
And then did you sleep?
I slept 14 hours.
Landing your first whale is a big event. Donald isn't one to brag, but his parents can't hide their quiet pride.
Yeah, it's a big deal. I know he's been working really, really hard.
That's Bernadette Adams, Donald's stepmom. In 2014, Bernadette became the first known woman from Ukiagvik to land a bowhead. Watching their son in this moment, Quincy says it's humbling.
I don't have any words for that. I don't have any words for watching that happen.
Outside in the yard, Quincy and a few other men portion out massive chunks of meat for crew and family. Quincy says whaling is about providing for others.
It's just built in us. It's just something that we yearn to do. You know, if we're not successful, then we find other ways to feed the community. But doing this one, feeding the community, is what it's all about.
This first bowhead was an auspicious start to Ukiagvik's spring whaling season. Since last week, crews have caught 5 more. In Ukiagvik, I'm Kavitha George.
The University of Alaska and a union representing graduate student workers have reached a tentative contract agreement. KUAC's Dan Bross has this report.
The 3-year deal with the Alaska Graduate Workers Association covers about 450 grad student workers, primarily at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. UA Public Affairs Director Jonathan Taylor says the contract reached by negotiators late yesterday includes a pay increase.
For master's students, their minimum pay will go up 14% to $24.50 an hour. And for PhD students, their minimum pay will go up 17% to $29 an hour. And those increases will put our compensation for graduate and PhD students in the top one-third of our comparative peers and our aspirational peers.
We were seeking an hourly wage that would put both PhD students and master's students above the poverty line and living expenses for Fairbanks.
UAF graduate worker Max Plichta says the master's student pay hike falls short of that goal, and he emphasizes Fairbanks' high cost of living.
You know, groceries are expensive, rent is expensive.
Another notable monetary item in the tentative contract is continued health care coverage for graduate workers. UA's Taylor says that's included despite the rising cost of insurance.
The cost for the exact same coverage as last year jumped $400,000 for the fiscal year that starts in July. So in this contract, we continue paying that 100%.
One health insurance concern is not addressed in the contract, according to Plichta. He says many student workers are frustrated with a lack of in-network providers, an issue he says could be revisited during the 3-year contract. Plichta also highlights 2 non-monetary provisions of the contract, including establishment of a formal grievance process.
Going to really help graduate workers that are in kind of precarious situations at the university go through an official process and have additional protections.
He also points to the contract's movement toward a more stable employment status.
Away from at-will employment, where graduate workers can be let go for any particular reason or hardly any reason at all.
Plichta says the contract change will help attract grad students to the university. The contract is the first for the Alaska Graduate Workers Association, which formed last fall and follows a contentious week during which members threatened to strike and the university secured a court order to prevent. UA's Taylor notes that the deal reached yesterday followed less than 100 days of negotiations.
I believe that's the shortest amount of time, certainly in recent memory at the university, that we've been able to reach a bargaining agreement with one of our units.
The deal must still be ratified by grad student union members and approved by UA regents. Taylor says there's some urgency as the contract must also be considered by the Alaska legislature for inclusion in the soon-to-be-finalized FY25 state budget. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
The labor market remains robust, so the Federal Reserve's likely to stay the course. I'm Nova Safo with a Marketplace Minute. The latest monthly count of job openings from the Labor Department shows little change, still plentiful, at 8.5 million. The number of people quitting their jobs also changed little. The strong labor market is allowing the Federal Reserve to maintain higher interest rates to cool inflation. Officials from the central bank are widely expected to leave rates unchanged today following their latest round of policy meetings. Investors are hoping those meetings will produce some guidance on when and whether to expect cuts this year. Profit at CVS Health declined by half in the first 3 months of the year. The healthcare giant says costs are rising in its Medicare Advantage business for as yet unidentified reasons. I'm Nova Safo with the Marketplace Minute.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Wednesday. It is the first day of May, the year 2024. May Day. The sun rose today at 6:16. It will set again at 9:58, giving us 15 hours and 42 minutes of glorious daylight, a gain of 4 minutes and 38 seconds compared to yesterday. A record high temperature for this date was 62 degrees set in 1983. And our record low is 27, set in 2006, then again in 2010. Currently 43 degrees, it's foggy and misty. It's been raining all day, and the Weather Service is expecting that rain to continue through the rest of the week until about Monday. Southeast winds to 20, gusting to 25 today, and up as high as 35 tonight, turning to the east tomorrow, as high as 20. Out at the airport, they have east winds at 17 right now, and they still have 10 miles of visibility. We have an outgoing tide. Our next low tide will be at 2:48 this afternoon here on the east side and be 0.4 feet, followed by a high tide at 9:52 p.m. of 5.9 feet. Over on the west side, your low tide will happen at 3:13 this afternoon and be 1.2 feet in Larsen Bay, followed by a high tide at 10:01 p.m. of 10.5 feet. Mariners, here's your weather forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 nautical miles. Small craft advisory through tonight. East winds to 25 knots, becoming east 30 tonight. 6-foot seas building to 7 feet tonight on our east side. And for tomorrow, east 20, seas to 7 feet. For Friday, south 25 with 8-foot seas. Over in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory through tomorrow. East winds to 25 knots, becoming east 30 tonight. 4-foot seas building to 6 feet this afternoon and then to 8 feet tonight. For tomorrow in the Shelikof, east 25, seas to 6 feet. We have a lost dog out there. Pingo hopefully has been found by now, but we have not heard anything to that effect yet. Pingo is an 8-year-old German short hair pointer male, last seen on Spruce Cape Trail. That was at 5:45 p.m. yesterday. He's very friendly and will come to you when called, and he's wearing an orange collar. Again, Pingo was lost last night on Spruce Cape Trail. There is a reward and 2 phone numbers to call. If you found Pingo, call 907-654-9535 or 907-942-5273. The Kodiak Island Borough Assembly will be having its regular meeting in the Borough Assembly Chambers tomorrow at 6:30 p.m. On Monday, the Citizens Board of Equalization will be having its regular meeting in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 5:30 p.m. And next Tuesday, the Women's Bay Service Area Board will be having its regular meeting in the Women's Bay Fire Hall at 5:30 p.m. All these meetings are open to the public, and meeting packets are available on the Kodiak Island Borough website. Contact the Borough Clerk's Office at 907-486-9310 with any questions. And it's coming up. It's the KMXT Spring Plant Sale. It's a community fundraiser to benefit KMXT. That's happening at 12 noon on Saturday at 1223 West Kuzkov Street. Everything's going to be there. Veggies, flowers, herb seedlings, perennials, rhubarb, shrubs, indoor plants, and more. For more information and to donate plants, call or text Marion at 907-539-5009. But again, that's Saturday at 12 noon, 1223 West Kuzkov. And the Phil-Am Association of Kodiak is having its celebration of its 2024 Coronation Night for Flores del Mayo at Santa Cruzan. That's happening at St. Mary's Gym on Saturday, 5 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. There is limited seating, but it's open and free to the public. Bring a dish to share if you'd like, and come and help celebrate Coronation Night for Flores del Mayo, Santa Cruzan. And don't forget, KMXT's Spring Fun Drive is coming next week. Prepare for the fun.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.